from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Hello and welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. Nick Darling here, as always, with Dusty Rhodes all the way across. Here we have a special guest in the middle of our formation. This is Zane Brewer here at Weyerbacher. What's the last name, Zane?
Miller.
Zane Miller, brewer here at Weyerbacher. How long have you been here? Oh, and by the way, we're here.
Yes,
we are at Weyerbacher.
I should mention that. We are on location at Weyerbacher. Where are we on the premises, I guess, is maybe. Let's start with that.
We are in, I guess it's a multi-purpose area. Definitely the bright spot is the barrel storage, which is sitting right behind us.
Those of you watching will note we've highlighted that in our shot setup.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
No, you don't. Know. The composition of this shot includes the barrel storage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
But yeah, we store some other material here, packaging material, and there's a little maintenance shop area as well. So
yeah, I'm seeing a lot of empty beer boxes, which normally are the worst kind of beer boxes, except that I know that these are set up to later be filled, so that's a positive.
Absolutely.
We are drinking some beer here today with you too, which is kind of one of the perks of doing a podcast, is that people seem to forgive drinking beer, and also being here at a brewery. So what do we have here today?
This is Line Street Pilsner. It's relatively new for us, and it's definitely an employee favorite up at the bar as a shift beer. So.
Yeah,
shift beer, very important.
Yeah.
Well, cheers. Thanks for having us out here. This Pilsner, as we take a taste. Oh, that's delightful. So how would you describe this as a style of Pilsner? Because, by the way, everybody, we're going to have this at the championship game, July 16th, at the stadium, also at the pre-party and post-party at City Tap House. So get excited about drinking this Pilsner. But how would you describe it as stylistically?
It is a lager. It's brewed with lager methods, lager yeast. We took our own little spin on it and added some American hops, essentially at the rate, maybe a little bit more aggressively than a traditional Pilsner would be. So it gives it a little bit of an American hop character, but nothing in your face. It's definitely not a India Pale Lager, which
is
kind of a style that's gaining momentum.
So it's all over now. I hadn't come across them before, though.
Absolutely.
Just the addition of the hops, I'm guessing, that tilts that a little?
Yeah, it's India Pale Lagers tend to be brewed with a lager yeast and, real basic Pilsner malt, maybe a light malt bill, but then they throw in the hops of an American IPA. This, we didn't want to take it quite to that level. We wanted to kind of maintain a Pilsner sort of drinkability, and that's what we have here.
Well, I'll tell you, the beer it reminds me most in the Pilsner style is it tastes a lot like Jaeger without that, like, sort of overarching bite that Jaeger has to it, so it's a little sweeter.
Excellent.
Still has that nice dry finish, though.
Yep.
Like this one.
Yeah, I'm going to be enjoying a lot of this championship weekend, so
I'll just
prepping my palate for now. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we do have the heat. You'll also notice we are in a working brewery, so there's a fan in the background. You have to deal with that sound thing. But this is delicious, delicious beer. So we know we don't have you for very long. The demands of brewing are very high. There's a lot of time sensitive elements to the process.
Absolutely.
So we want to make sure we get you in and out. So we have an idea, and this came to us. I guess it came to us through Twitter a little bit, right? Is this through Twitter, I believe?
Isn't everything through Twitter?
Yeah, I think we got it. We got this through Twitter, which is the idea that matching beer and ultimate. And so we decided, and that's from at Bill Sickles, who I believe is Billy Sickles' father.
Unless it's Bill Sickles, Billy Sickles' parody account.
It could also be that. Billy Sickles, as he will be in the future. But he asked us to think about pairing beer and ultimate. So we decided to take it one step further and talk about pairing particular positions in ultimate with beer. Now, you're not super well versed in ultimate, I understand.
No.
Have you ever played before at all?
No, to be honest, in college we had an intramural Ultimate team. I played our intramural rugby team. So.
Oh, all right.
We share a lot of the same fields at a lot of universities.
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover.
we got to be good friends with our Ultimate team. And yeah, we were sharing the same space, and we both enjoy drinking beer. So.
We used to party with the rugby team at Syracuse a lot. That was a thing. So anyway, Ultimate, basically, we're gonna talk about some positions. We're gonna talk about what style of beer matches up to it, and then we're gonna look to you to give us a Weyerbacher beer that might fit with that person's persona. All
right. All
right. And that's what we're gonna do. So
you want me to?
Let's get started. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with something obvious: offensive handler.
Offensive handler. So give me a couple examples of people in the league who are offensive handlers.
Okay, so you've got like Nick Hiranet's a good example.
Hiranet. Okay.
Ted Jensen.
Okay.
Example.
Yep.
Lloyd Blake.
These are
players who have a lot of throws. You get pulled to on offense, so you have to maintain possession a lot. And
tend to be a little maybe more conservative, a little more technical?
Yeah.
Would that be right?
Right. So you have to execute a high number of throws at a high level of skill, and then sort of enable the rest of your offense to continue on. So my first, they have to be very steady players, in a sense. So my first instinct here was to go with like a session IPA, just a low alcohol sort of IPA, because you have to be a little bit spicy. You have to have a little bit of like hop character to it. You have to do some things that are out of order, but you can't be getting blitzed. You can't be like overwhelmed on the field. You can't be taking too many risks, because you have to make everything else work.
Yeah, yeah, not too heady a brew,
right?
But one with some bite and character, nonetheless. Yeah. Because you got to be able to nibble away
that
offense.
Under pressure.
And you got to live up under pressure. All right, I like that. I like that. So what do we got? What do we got from Weyerbacher that will fit with our handler? A lower ABV IPA. I like all the acronyms, by the way.
So the lower IB or lower ABV thing is going to be difficult for us.
Always here, right?
That's true.
Here at Weyerbacher.
Let's talk
about it. I guess when you initially were talking about kind of a regular part of the lineup or someone who does a lot of handling, kind of a reliable member of the team, it made me think of our Merry Monks right off the bat.
Oh, switching over to the Belgian style a little bit. I like this. Yeah, let's see where this is going.
It's definitely our flagship beer. We make a lot of that beer, and it tends to have mass appeal. It's kind of a good fallback, and it's really a leader of our team, essentially. So.
I like the direction you've taken.
Yeah, I like the turn. He's not buying any of your garbage. He's just going to take it in the direction he wants. I like this, though. It also makes sense to me, too, because what would you call it? A Belgian golden ale? Belgian triple. So it's got a little bit of that higher ABV, a little bit more get up and go.
Yeah.
But you get that
yeast character as opposed to the hop character.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Just giving you that forward flavor to
it. I like
it. Just relying on the hops, like us Americans like.
I like it. Yeah, we fell back on it because we're just we're quintessential Americans. It was just 4th of July. By the way, happy birthday to my son Beckett, born on 4th of July. That's how American I am. I reproduce on the date our country was born.
Yeah, I was supposed to be born on 4th of July.
Yeah, fantastic.
July 9th.
You got July 9th.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a shame.
My mother's still upset with me about that.
My son believes that the fireworks are for him still, which is what I'm going for. All right, so let's do that. We're going to stick with it. Handler, offensive handler, Merry Monks.
Okay.
All right. Merry Monks.
Okay,
let's go to what we got next.
So we're gonna go on the opposite side. We're gonna go with the defensive handler.
Oh, this is the
counterpart to the offensive handlers. The defensive handler is out there.
Yang to the yin.
Trying to irritate the crap out of the offensive handler.
Yeah.
Trying to stop everything that they do until a turnover happens, and then they have to take on the role of the offensive handler, essentially. So you have to have a little more like aggression to it, and a little more sort of I don't know. What's a better way to put that? You have to be an irritant on some level.
you
just have to be.
You do.
Like,
that's accurate.
Irritating.
Yeah, you're not gonna get a lot of blocks necessarily. That's not really your job. Your job is to be just a pain in the ass. Really.
So my quick response to this, I'm starting to rethink it now, was something along the stout lines, where you're you're getting that deep roast malt character. And you're sort of like, you have a little bit of the burning when you taste it.
You need
it.
The burn, though. You need the bite and the burn. You need that, like, maybe it's high ABV.
But you need
like,
that sweetness at the end.
Yeah.
You got to balance it out. Because
you're not full aggressive.
Because after the turnover happens, you have to encourage your teammates to be positive. And you can't just be all aggression all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing. When you get it back, you then have to calm everybody down, and you have to be the one who's in charge. So there's a little mix in there. All right, we're throwing it over to you. What do we got?
Made me think, I'm going to take your stout route here, and it made me think immediately of our Sunday morning stout.
It's got the crossword on the front bottle. I like that one.
Absolutely. Sunday morning in tournament play is when this player really shows up, too. So I like that.
There we go. It definitely is our version of the bourbon barrel-aged stout. It has been known sometimes on beer blogs to take on the nickname the KBS killer. And you'll find that, you'll have the Kentucky Breakfast Stout camp versus the Sunday Morning Stout camp.
Oh, I love that.
So I think as delicious as it is, it has a way of, marginalizing or irritating lover of the Kentucky Breakfast Stout.
That's good.
I think the coffee tie in there also works really well, where usually defensive handlers need to get a little aggressive and sort of like amp themselves up.
Yeah, a little less zen than your Mary Monk guy. They have to be a little more forward with it. I like it. All right, that's good. All right, I love this. All right, so we got two down. So this is going well so far. It's going off the rails very soon. Let's keep going. What do we got next?
So the next one I was going to go with was sort of a deep cutter. So this is the sort of guy who tends to be taller, tends to be pretty fast, doesn't touch the disc all that often, but their responsibility is to strike deep for like longer, deeper throws and sort of take the top off of the defense.
That's go big or go home.
So my thought on this.
Who we got? I didn't do this for the last category. Who do we have in this position?
Well, I mean, again, we're talking about this championship game, so the couple of the players who come to mind here. You got Timmy Purston on the offensive side for Portland. You got Peter Woodside on the defensive side for Portland. Yeah. And then you have for Philadelphia, you've got Vince Radoms.
Radoms.
He's just a giant human.
He is a large human.
Wait for him and Peter Woodside to stand next to each other. I don't know how it's going to
be. Is that going to be head-to-head battle? Are we going to see that?
So.
Oh, my God.
These guys are just.
I just got very excited
like
about
six,
this.
6'5", 6'6".
I forgot that I was going to get to watch that matchup all day. Oh,
and
very
got,
happy.
Like Greg Martin for Philadelphia on the defensive side.
Just jumps clean out of the room.
Who just is also kind of a wrecking ball, which is a whole different position in all time.
Yeah, that we can bring up that position later.
So my first thought here was with the way that you sort of have to roast people downfield, you got to go with a smoke beer.
Oh, something with some smoke in it.
Yeah,
I like that.
You got to go.
No, that's good. You got to smoke them.
You got to feel that roast of the player that you just cut deep on.
Yep, the burn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. All right, let's say anything smoked. We got anything in the genre?
We do. We have a rotating series of beers, the Jester's Choice series, which essentially is a collaborative effort between all the brewers. We'll sit down and we tend to make it quarterly, a couple times a year. But we did just make a smoked porter. That was
perfect.
Awesome. Yeah. So, that's definitely our smoked attempt. I would say it for the deep ball, my thought immediately was our, rotating IPA series.
Mm.
We're not the first brewery that comes to mind when you think of IPAs, and we recognize that. So we've been trying to make some noise on the market with a deep, a long shot beer, essentially. So management has allowed us to experiment and put out a bunch of different IPA recipes, each one different, also quarterly, a couple times a year. Long shots, we're hoping to, score big.
I like
this, but this might apply better to the person making that throw.
Well, so that's going to be the next one.
Yeah.
Before we get there.
So let's go back before we get
there.
I just
wanted to give half a shout to one of my favorite beers that Weyerbacher's produced. This is the Weyerbacher 15.
Oh, yeah.
The smoked stout.
Yeah.
It's been an Imperial Stout. I bought a case way back when. I guess it was 6 years ago now.
You still have some in the cellar, right?
I still have.
Can we bring one
left.
Of those out maybe for the next podcast?
And I'm still drinking them at this point. They're fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
When I thought of smoked beer, that came to mind immediately. So you wanted to go to the...
Yeah, I'm thinking this long shot idea that he's talking about. So what do we got? What do we got here? Who's
what's
the position?
Huckers and shooters. So a huck is a
shooters.
Deep pass. Shooters. I've been trying to work on some statistics, which are throws into the end zone is essentially a shot and ultimate.
So who we got in this category? And,
well, the first person you think of is Cody Bjorklund.
Yeah, 41 assists this
41
year.
41 assists. Lead record.
Nonsense.
You
don't have that in context, but it's nonsense.
It's right.
Yeah, it's absolute nonsense.
He beat the previous record by about six, yeah. Somewhere around there. I don't remember.
Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right.
And these are players who take chances. Cody's completion percentage is down around 83 or 86%. I can't remember right off the top of my head. Should have done a little more prep work for this.
Yeah, he takes a lot of shots.
And these are guys that just step out of bounds of the
kind of a Kobe Bryant.
And you put the disc downfield, you put it into other people's hands, and you're not necessarily sure what's going to come back. And you sort of have to rely on that method of chance and skill and sort of the art of throwing in this case. So my original thought on this was I'd go towards a sour or a wild ale, where you don't necessarily know how the yeast is going to come through in the drink itself.
I like that. I think that's a good comparison, good analogy. In fact, several of these barrels behind us have some of our sour projects. Chris Riley, our lab manager, does an awesome job of creating his own blends of sour beer organisms. We never truly know how it's going to turn out. So we taste and, hope for... Yeah.
This actually sounds like a really good analogy for this. Do we have one beer in particular we can point people to that's out now? That's like if you're the deep shot guy, if you're like the huck thrower, like what's your sour wild ale kind of beer that like is out now that they should go just drink?
We have a a Brunicorn series.
Okay. Yeah, I love that a lot.
Yeah, the label is awesome. I mean, it's this pissed off unicorn. but that again, another rotating series. They will be available as the beer is ready.
Yeah.
They're a little more rare. Definitely should be sought out if you can find one. They come in 750 milliliter bottles, cork and cage. We just released one that won some award in Philadelphia. There's some Philly... it wasn't the Philly Beer Awards, but it was a magazine ranking different sour beers, and it ended up taking first place.
Awesome.
But they've been turning out really, really well. The next one will be a blend of blackberry, boysenberry, fruited sour versions.
Awesome. So, I love that. So when we're talking, I mean, the geeky thing is we're talking that organism mix, you're talking like Pediococcus, Lactobacillus.
Absolutely, even different Brett strains.
Brett in there? Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't all necessarily have everything that you just mentioned, but...
It's different blends of... Yeah, I gotcha.
Absolutely.
So can we just agree that we, from now on, will refer to Cody Bjorklund as the Brunicorn?
I think we need to check in with him on that next week.
He'll be in Friday, yeah. So we'll talk to him about being the Brunicorn next Friday. Maybe we'll get one of those beers to have for the guys when they come into the studio to do a little the media day that we're up to. All right, let's keep moving though. We're running low on time. We got to get him back to work.
Got two or three left. How many do you think we should do?
Let's do two more.
Okay.
Let's do two more.
Okay. So. We're going to deal with a sort of a shutdown defender then.
Shutdown defender.
The person who just, you sick on somebody who you want to take out of the offense, and their job isn't to necessarily create a block, but is just to harass somebody so that they're never open, so that every single pass to them is difficult. So they have to be just consistently present all the time and ready to just work and work and work and then work some more, and then even when it fails, just continue working.
So what's the hardest working beer?
Right, so my thought on that is actually a Pilsner.
Is actually, yeah. I was thinking that myself.
Yeah. I was thinking I wish I had saved Mary Monks for that, too. The Pilsner has really gained momentum. We find that we're brewing a lot of it, and it seems to be well-received. So we're hoping that it continues to be that presence out there on the market. And
it's always been a hard working beer, hasn't it? The Pilsner, I mean, broadly speaking.
Lots of like, you know, like a farmhouse ale, like a saison, something like that. The theory is
that's
that
very,
that
for, very farm
for you to be
oriented.
At,
yeah.
At, while you're doing farm work.
Yeah. I mean,
I can't confirm that
this
that's
is
true.
We're not talking about Art Shell here.
One of my favorite egg spinners.
Yeah. Shout out to Art Shell. Had to, I think, farming and ultimate. Got a little bit too much over the course of the year.
There's
a lot of work.
You got to be up early in the morning to do both.
Yeah, absolutely true. I like it, though. I like the Pilsner, hardworking Pilsner, downfield, doing the job. Can we get to my favorite one now?
Oh, of course we can.
Yeah.
I think this is your favorite one. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the last position that we're going to talk about here is a position that I played when I first started playing ultimate. And it's important to a team, but once you get into the game, you're kind of irrelevant. This is deepest bench. So you're just kind of making your team better day by day in practices and workouts and pushing everybody to be ahead. But then when it comes to game day, you're just kind of standing around with a jersey on.
I have a Weyerbacher beer for this, and I hope you're picking the one I have.
And you have...
mainly related to you.
Oh, good heavens. so it's very difficult there to sort of find your way in and make an impact in individual games, but it's required for you to be of a high quality such that your team on the whole can make an impact. And I really wasn't sure what to go with on this one.
Does this guy drink on the bench?
It depends how serious
the
taking
how serious
the
game is
or
the tournament
is. And how deep your team is. So if you have like 27 people on the roster, the 27th guy, could be drinking on the bench. Well, we're trying to progress away from drinking.
Yeah, we've
on the
moved
bench.
Away from that in our league, but in
yeah,
you
yeah,
know.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't get the image out of my head of the rugby allusion to this. Our bench guys tended to be our cheerleaders. And they were encouraged to drink on the sidelines.
I love the direction this is going.
So I was just thinking Blithering Idiot.
That was my pick.
I have a feeling it
was
going
that was
there.
My pick. I want to tell you this, that I got a tweet just before this from at Darren Schultz.
Okay.
Remember Darren Schultz?
Yeah, Darren.
He said, can you send me a case of Blithering Idiot or 10? So that was referencing all of us. So yeah, that Blithering Idiot, it was definitely my top choice for this position right off the bat.
But to make an actual comparison with your description of this deep bench guy, I mean, it's not necessarily our top seller. It's often overlooked. Oh. You know, not everyone wants to drink a barley wine every night. But... Blithering Idiot is a really solid beer. It's probably one of my favorites that we make, and so it's definitely an old reliable. It may not see a lot of action,
but you can sit it down for a while, and when you pull it off the bench,
absolutely,
it's going
to
be delightful.
Absolutely,
years and years from now.
Delightful. Remember the old label for that used to have like a jester on it. I don't remember seeing the new one now.
It does. Just to see if we had an example here.
Sitting out here around us, possibly.
It does have an updated jester.
You guys did a bunch of new labels just recently in the last 2 or 3 years, I want to say.
Yes.
All the label art changed.
Awesome. Well, we've kept Zane a little bit longer
long.
Than we needed. Just
hopefully
a couple minutes
long.
Longer. Hopefully nothing's burning in the kitchen, as they say. But we're gonna get him out of here. Come out to the championship game. All weekend long, you know, the pre-game party at City Tap House, the game itself, the post-game party. We're going to be serving Weyerbacher beers. We're going to have a couple special things out there, which we'll be talking more about in the coming weeks, but we'll definitely have this delicious Pilsner, which you guys are not as good at drinking as I am.
I get that talk. You just sat here and listened to the rest
of
us. Yeah,
that's kind of my game. I have priorities. But it was great of you to be here. Thank you so much. And we're going to take... what is abnormal in Cleats and Cufflinks, a very short break. And Dusty or I'll come back. We have a couple more things to talk about, but we got to get you out of here, so we're going to do that now.
All right.
Thanks,
Thank
everybody.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been great. Thanks for your time.
And we're back on Cleats and Cufflinks. I've actually never said that before. We always do it in just one shot.
That's true, one shot.
I've never said we're back. So we're back.
No takes.
On Cleats and Cufflinks, live, not live,
still from
taped from Weyerbacher Brewing Company.
Well, I'm still alive.
Yeah, we're alive, alive from Weyerbacher Brewing
way,
Company.
We just had a Brewer Zane Miller in our guest seat of honor
just
here.
Just fantastic job.
First of all, fantastic.
Threw him into the fire. Literally did not prep him any way.
And we kind of prepped each other a little bit beforehand.
Yeah.
But, he did an excellent job. I think the rugby background helped him a little bit in terms of talking about sports.
Definitely.
Obviously knew the Weyerbacher beer catalog pretty well. But I just wanted to give a shout out to some of these barrels in here. This is a fantastic barrel selection already. There's Heaven Hill.
We got a lot of bourbon barrels
Buffalo
in here.
There's Buffalo Trace.
Yep.
There's Four Roses. I don't know what exactly it is. They're aging in here.
There's beer in these barrels.
I would like to stick a spigot in there.
Just a straw. Just a big...
Right?
Just a big straw.
Well, I mean, they're opening on the top here. They keep the tops...
Yeah, those of you who are listening...
Get you a little taste.
Those of you who are listening rather than watching, we are sitting in front of just racks...
Do you think they'd notice if we
...of barrels. They might not. No, they wouldn't miss it.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, we've got the only camera in here, I suppose.
The evidence is ours. Anyway, yeah, Zane was great. Brewer here at Weyerbacher. Weyerbacher, of course, the official beer of the MLU Championship game this year. Going to be served at all the MLU Championship events on the weekend. Really excited about that. We're actually picking up beer right now while we're here for an event tomorrow night at the Philadelphia Area Disc Alliance. PADA, Fairmount Park Summer League, FPSL. So big Friday night event. We're going to have kegs of Weyerbacher out there. We're going to be selling some championship tickets. We're going to have some contests and giveaways.
Wish I was still down in Philly.
If you play PADA and you listen to this, a Venn diagram is probably a very small crossover. if you do both those things and you hear this, come on out tomorrow night. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And you, of course, are paying homage to that organization on you with your shirt selection today.
This is the first PADA league I played in. I think I played in two summer leagues over the course of the time that I was down in and around Philly and in New Jersey and all of that. This is 2004, PADA 20th Annual Fairmount Park Summer League. It was in the Athena division.
Yeah, they were all gods and goddesses for the divisions that year. So Athena division.
I don't think I had any eventual MLU players on my team that year. I had some other fellow club players that we recruited. Definitely had some mainstays in PADA on that league. We finished second to last, I believe.
Yeah.
Apparently, drafting women with your early optional picks is not the way to go in PADA draft, which is what we did. We had a lot of strong women, but I would say some of our men who were not necessarily drafted weren't good at throwing to, you know, women.
Or...
So one of my low-level critiques of PADA Summer League is that club players are asked to do a lot on the field.
Yeah,
I got
absolutely
yelled at by some of my teammates who are not club players saying I have to go every other pass and I don't really want to. So, and this was back when I was deep bench on Pike.
I
don't really have any experience being every other pass. So, you know, I enjoyed playing that year and I enjoyed all of the events specifically involved with PADA. That's
the social element of PADA is phenomenal.
It's easily the best community I've been involved in for any league whatsoever is Fairmount Park Summer League. Do the cookouts on every Friday, have lots of beer out there, have lots of friendly atmosphere going on. You get to meet everybody in your division, outside your division, all of that.
That's why I'm so excited. I'm so excited about tomorrow night. I mean, by the time anyone listens to it, it'll be tonight, because I won't put this out till tomorrow because I'm a little lazy.
Well, and a quick shout out to where I was this past weekend. I was at the U.S. Open up in Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah, you went up to Rhode Island.
I got to see Trent Dillon, who's playing for Seattle Sockeye now.
You went out to Sockeye?
Right, so way back when, he was just the kid on the sideline during his father Dave Dillon's game.
He also played for the Spinners.
Right, so he's been around here and there and has been played for Pitt.
And he won the Callahan.
So he's just like this phenomenal player and whatever. And,
his father's my dentist.
I won't even go there. So I just want to say that one of the reasons that he got so involved in Ultimate is obviously the experience that he had in PADA.
Absolutely.
And I don't really think there's a quibble with that. You know, sort of the thing. One of their mottos used to be, I wanted to say slogans, I almost said slottos.
Slottos, one of their slottos.
So, used to be breed Ultimate.
Yeah.
So the idea of just bringing Ultimate, making it bigger, like getting the idea of Ultimate into the youth, as we like to say.
My kids are out there like a night a week.
Yeah.
And they're throwing the disc around, they're hanging out with Frisbee people, they're learning to be weird.
Learning?
Yeah, I mean, I've taught them fairly well, but you can always do more. That's what I've learned as a parent. You can always do more. So a little extra effort goes a long way. That was actually, so the 2004 year was the year that I went to Summer League Finals in PADA against Heckman.
Oh, the Heckman.
And lost to him.
Yeah. Yeah, so. He's got those black discs.
Yeah.
He always uses the spike,
they're in the back of his car. Yeah. Melting in the sun.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you're in Paddock, come out. If you're not, I'm sorry. Because it's going to be a really fun night tomorrow night. We're going to have a really good time. I actually have a game that night, so I'll be injured by the time we get around to serving beer, which is good, because I don't like to carry kegs anyway, so it'll be excellent. And then we also are picking up beer for the VIP experience at the championship game.
I've been to the VIP experience at Franklin Field the very first year.
Yeah, it's a cool room, right, up in the upstairs?
It's a little, like, it feels like a clubhouse.
It's very Ivy League. It's a really Ivy League room, yeah.
Although there weren't that many people in blazers or sport coats. Maybe that's the
There were a handful.
Invading.
Yeah. Less Blazers. We'll bring the Blazers this year. But Weyerbacher's actually providing us some really cool beer for that experience. We'll be talking more about that on Facebook and Twitter leading up to the game. But if you're into beer and you're into Ultimate, it's worth the ticket price to get up there in that room, because you're basically like an hour in that room. All the way up to halftime, that room's going to be open. So you can go up there, you can get beer, you can get food. They have a pretty good food menu, actually. Yep. So beer, food. You can see the game. It's not like a box seat.
No, it's kind of around the corner.
Yeah, you can watch it through the window. You can definitely see the field, but it's set back a little bit. Yeah. I wouldn't stay up there and watch the game, but you can definitely go up and get refreshed at various points, which will be nice. And, of course, the hour before, players will be coming up and signing autographs, hanging out, chilling.
Oh, cool. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, we're going to set them up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't need to warm up. I mean, there's stairs. They'll be fine.
Stairs.
But yeah, so that's all going to be really fun. I'm so psyched to have Weyerbacher part of this. They've been awesome through the whole thing, and hopefully this is the beginning of a long relationship, because their beer is delicious as well. For those of you who are here for the first part of the show, which I don't know how you would get to this part without being, we talked a little bit about how beer matches up with positions in Ultimate.
Yeah.
So for our final segment today, because we are running a little long, as we tend to do, but we had an interview.
Guess it was great.
There's an excuse. Our final segment today is, okay, we've looked at the different positions, and granted, we didn't look at them in any technical sense. We just related them to the type of beer we felt fit best. Now let's talk about, actually, what is the average, because everybody has to do all the things in Ultimate. That's
eventually
one of the things about Ultimate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, football, you could play an entire year of football and never touch a football.
Well, and in soccer, you could be Cristiano Ronaldo and never have to play defense.
Yeah, never have to run back. So there's plenty of, in Ultimate, you have to do everything to a certain extent, one extent or another. You're going to throw it at some point. You're going to catch it at some point. You're going to play defense at some point. This all happens. So the question that you looked at that I'm interested in talking about is, what does the average Ultimate player look like? What is the John Doe of Ultimate? Not to refer to your club team that you coach.
I just had to come up with a name for the fellow. Yeah. I guess I was a little primed.
Yeah,
that.
you're a little biased.
Coaching.
What is the John Doe?
The John Doe of MLU.
Of MLU.
Team
look
average.
Like? Team average. So what does this look like in? Let's pick some categories and just
so,
run through it.
I wrote about this a little bit for the recent Disc Don't Lie, which should be going up in a couple days here. I need heavy editing, as it turns out. So John Doe MLU plays 92.56 points over the course of the season, completes 664.5 passes on 72.19 attempts.
Okay.
For
what
an 89.36 completion percentage.
Huh. That's actually lower than I thought it
would
be.
That's one of the things that stuck out to me as well, is that you always assume that in Ultimate you complete passes at about 94 or 93%.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the goal that you're aiming for. And I'm certain that some of this has to do with the idea of time running out. So
you're going
to
lose
shots,
it at the end of quarters.
You have to take shots and passes that you don't necessarily want to. And the idea of trying to catch up in a timed game gives you more room to make errors a little bit.
Is this just 2016 averages?
This is just 2016.
Yeah, we had a rough weather year. I wonder if that played into it.
Well, but at least you weren't at Boxer Stadium.
There's also that. For those that remember, Boxer Stadium, the San Francisco Dogfish home for a couple of years, was... I'm going to say, I think it's probably where wind goes when it's not elsewhere. It's
well,
like the home of wind.
There's only one other place that I'm familiar with. Well, maybe a couple. But one that sticks out to me is if you've ever played College Ultimate at Gettysburg here in Pennsylvania, that is just a wide open plain with mountains on it. So it's
just funneling
it's
the wind
tunnel.
In. Okay.
Yeah, so comparable.
Similar environment. Yeah.
The Boxer Stadium bounce is not to be underestimated, and I wrote about that a couple years ago, where every team's completion percentage dropped as soon as they went to Boxer Stadium by about 3 to 4 points. So it's not like environment plays a significant role. And on the East Coast this year, we had particularly awful weather.
It was rough this year.
That's kind of what the East Coast is.
Yeah, but it was more than usual this year, I felt like.
Specifically in D.C., there was more rain.
D.C.
Like,
was rough.
It wouldn't rain during the week. It wouldn't be windy during the week.
And waited for Saturdays.
And just wait for Saturdays.
Yeah.
And with that stadium, it's kind of, there's a hill behind it on one side, and there's a big, wide open area on the other. And the wind
just come on in, wind.
Yeah.
Invite it in, yeah.
So, in addition to that completion percentage of 89.36, John Doe MLU completes 97.99% of catches. So your catch percentage is also very high.
Not a lot of drops.
So your average MLU player catches 97.99 passes out of 100 thrown to him.
Oh, but how devastating is that small percentage of drops, though?
Well, the thing that I found more telling is when you break it down by individual players, any player who's below 97.99% catching is below average. So you have some players who are catching 9 out of 10 discs, or 95 out of 100 discs, and they're below average.
So that's interesting.
So it depends on the number of drops you have and the number of opportunities you have, obviously, and the quality of the people who are throwing to you.
That's a part that's often forgotten.
Some people throw with the wrong spin to the wrong hand. Some people don't time it right for your feet. These are all things that you learn bit by bit as you play. But if you're catching below that percentage, you're below average.
I think of Trey Katzenbach with his direct up the gut flick. But it works because he just buries it in your chest.
And we saw a pass like this for the spinners on championship weekend where Jack Casey sort of like was diving backwards on a pass. I think it was from Ethan Peck.
Just gunned it in there because
there's a little tiny window to get through.
Sometimes that's
but
how
the
it
thing
happens.
Is if your and Revolver does this too in the club division where they rely on being able to hit the front of the stack with a really hard pass. The guy just absorbs it, catches it, moves on with his life. But you mentioned Trey. Trey's got a very high catch percentage. Trey doesn't drop a lot of discs.
Doesn't drop much of anything. Yeah.
He teaches you how to do it by looking at you. Yeah. At least back in the club days, maybe he's taking a little easier now.
I'm not allowed a lot
of spinners practice.
I wouldn't count on it.
So we've also got the average John Doe MLU.
Okay.
Is responsible for 11.57 points over the course of the year, so almost 12 points.
Goals and assists. Okay.
So 5.8 goals, 5.77 assists. Pretty decent.
Yep.
But the thing is, this is averaging in offensive players as well as defensive players.
Right.
So it's taking the total average player, assuming that you're spending your time on offense and defense.
It's the one composite player.
Right.
Yeah.
So then this player also gets 3.88 blocks. I'm sorry, not 3.88,
3.81. Oh, yeah.
I know the decimals are key here.
The hundredths are my favorite decimal place.
So less than four, fewer than four blocks, more than three. So it means you should be getting a block over the course of the season, provided you play a significant number of points, up to about 92. So you should be generating blocks here and there as an MLU player, because you do have to play defense.
You don't have to be getting
5, 10, 21 blocks.
You don't have to be Marques Brownlee.
Right. So
you could be another person.
So that's the other part of this. If you want to compare these players.
So let's compare averages to leaders.
So the league leader in points is Cody Bjorklund.
Yeah, so what is the average points?
The average points is 11.57.
And Cody?
Cody is at 57.
The average?
11.57.
Cody?
Yeah. So if we're gonna keep on the Cody for a moment, he's got 41 assists on the season. The average MLU player is 5.77 assists.
What is he doing?
Just throwing it to the end zone.
Just generally throwing. He's a shooter.
He's a shooter.
He's drinking... what would say, a sour beer. He's drinking, he's the Brunicorn.
A little bit of wild. Yeah,
he's the Brunicorn. He's the Weyerbacher Brunicorn.
So for goals, we've got Hauser and Persten at 29 goals. MLU average, 5.80.
Wow. Outliers. This distribution is crazy.
The league leader in catch percentage is up at 100, and you can see all the players who have 100%
completion,
100% catches on the piece that I wrote.
And if you go on to MLU and go to the stats page, you can sort by completion percentage and look through that.
And so then we've got second assist, average MLU player, 5.02 second assist. MLU leader, Matt Weintraub, 22 second assist. This is the path that leads the assist.
He should play hockey.
And then we've got completions. We've got Gabe Sankey at 298 completions on 319 throws, which is good for 93.4% completion.
He's like the Satchel Paige of the MIU. He's throwing so many times.
And over and over again. It's usually on target. It's usually on time. So the receivers don't have to make that many adjustments.
Phenomenal. Kind of completion percentage at that many throws, phenomenal.
It's Kalikia.
I like that, yeah.
And then if we're looking at blocks, as you said, Brownlee had 21 blocks. That's almost seven times the MLU average.
My gracious.
And to bring it back to Gabe for a second, we've got 200. He played 208 points this season. The average MLU player is less than half of that at 92 and change.
Yeah,
so these outliers for our team, for our teams this year, for the individual players who are used in these aggressive manners, who find their ways into finding assists, finding blocks, finding goals. There's some outstanding players.
Now, do you think that there is a, should teams be looking at that and saying, we shouldn't have this kind of outlier, we should have a more level distribution, or is the star, like, go get it kind of thing important?
And we can talk about this more once we get into talking about usage rate a little bit, because people who end your possessions are the most important players in that individual possession. Whether you're throwing turnovers,
whether for good or bad,
whether you're throwing goals,
they're the most significant
player.
When
you're catching goals,
yeah,
they're the person who's responsible for the end of your possession.
Yeah.
And if you never end your possessions with anything other than the goals, you win.
Oh, yeah, all kinds of winning.
Every possession you have ends in a goal, you win.
Yeah.
So we talk about negative possession ending and positive possession ending, and we talk about usage rate, and players who have a high usage rate end a lot of possessions. And you want those players to have positive effects, but they don't always.
Interesting.
I'd like to go into this a little bit in the most recent Distant Lie, which is coming out in the future from when we're recording this, but I don't know exactly when.
But you don't know exactly how far.
We talk about how some players are being sort of overused for their positive effect. Some players are right about about average, so they have the same number of points per 100 possessions as they do turnovers per 100 possessions. Cody Bjorklund, about perfectly used, apparently.
He's doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing.
Which is pretty low, below league average. He is accounting for so many goals and assists that you're just kind of in awe of his ability to do that consistently at that high rate of usage.
He's also just getting the disc all the time.
So hard to stop.
No one can stop him. Well, we're going to see if anyone can stop him. I don't have high hopes. I mean, this is what he does.
Yeah.
We're going to see that next weekend, though.
Very excited about this game still.
It's going to be.
I'm doing more and more research. I'm getting so into it.
We're going to have, my guess would be, a kind of extra long podcast next week where we're going to talk big game preview for the weekend. And then we're also, I think, going to work in some pod specials. We got a couple, we got some refs in town. The MLU is pulling refs from all over the country for this game.
Oh.
We're actually flying refs in from the West Coast.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the all-star ref crew.
Hopefully they'll get together beforehand and talk about it so they can figure out how to work.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want a lot of confusion there, so hopefully they'll work that out.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Exactly. But we're bringing them all in. So we're going to have some refs in town. We're going to have some Portland players in town early on Friday. We're going to do kind of a media day on Friday.
Perhaps we should talk to some spinners, too, considering they're in town.
They'll be there. They just show up around the office. They're just
so, a quick little thing about this championship game. This is the first time that the championship opponents have a common opponent. They've both played Boston.
So we get an opportunity to see how they perform against Boston.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Yeah, and I know Portland was not incredibly happy with their performance in that game.
With their 1-point loss against one of the other top teams in the league.
Yeah.
Of course.
They like winning.
This is the sign of people who like winning.
They like winning. They enjoy winning. Yeah. So it's going to be great. So tune in next week for all that. We got to get out of here right now, though, because Weyerbacher has work to do, and we're occupying their rack room and their boxing room.
This is not the
Occupy
movement.
Yeah.
Occupy Brewery.
Occupy Brewery. I'm in. So we're going to get out of here. Remember, enjoy your Weyerbacher responsibly, and enjoy it at the championship game next weekend. Get on out there July 16th, VIP tickets, all that at mluchampionship.com. If you are unfortunate enough to not be able to make it, tune into mlulive.com. Game will be streamed live there. Dusty on the mic, as it were. With Mr. Jeff Poster. Love Mr. Jeff Poster. In the meantime, questions, comments, concerns, you can reach us at Nick Darling, at NICDARLING on Twitter, at Dust Tweeter, DustWeeter.
You're so good
on Twitter. And a last minute shout out to Glenn Poole. Yes, Major League Ultimate will be at Wildwood. Looking at a showcase game. possibility of a cleats and cufflinks matchup. I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm throwing down the gauntlet, the challenge. We'll talk about that more next week on Cleats and Cufflinks.